G'day and welcome to Ad Nauseam Podcast. Today we're going to talk about the approach to paediatric sepsis. The resource for the talk today is RCH's guideline on sepsis assessment and management. The key points for sepsis: it's a life-threatening organ dysfunction syndrome characterized by a dysregulated host response to infection. It's important to diagnose and manage sepsis quickly, but also not to overdiagnose, as it's quite a rare event in kids. Septic shock is sepsis plus evidence of cardiovascular organ dysfunction, and hypotension is a late sign. We also need to know that inotropes and vasopressors can be used safely peripherally whilst we're initially resuscitating kids. So who are the high-risk groups? They're neonates, immunocompromised children, children with central venous access devices, and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. The major pathogens in infants less than 2 months of age are E. coli, Group B strep, Listeria monocytogenes is uncommon, and HSV infection should be considered in the differential of sepsis. Major pathogens in older children include Neisseria meningitidis, Streptococcus pneumoniae, Staphylococcus aureus, either MSSA or MRSA, and Group A strep, so strep pyogenes. Moving on to assessment now. On history, we want to know about fever, sore throat, cough and whether it's productive, vomiting, diarrhea, dysuria, pain, headache or neck stiffness, confusion, rashes, myalgias, limp, intake and output, and also vaccinations as the pertinent history. On examination, we're looking at firstly vital signs, noting that they all can be deranged: tachycardia, hypotension, tachypnea, hypoxia, febrile, altered conscious state, so lethargy, irritability, floppiness and a weak cry, or a general unwell appearance, plus or minus a non-blanching rash. From an airway breathing point of view, tachypnea, hypoxia and grunting. From a circulation point of view, features of cardiovascular dysfunction, so reduced peripheral perfusion, so pale, cool or mottled skin, prolonged cap refill time, greater than 2 seconds, tachycardia, decreased urine output, so less than 1 mL/kg/h, or a narrow pulse pressure. Then we think about cold and warm shock. Cold shock more akin to like a cardiogenic type picture, narrow pulse pressure, prolonged cap refill, cool peripheries, more common in neonates and infants, and then a warm shock, so a vasodilatory shock, more like adults, with a wide pulse pressure, low diastolic, bounding pulses, flushed skin with rapid cap refill, and that's more common in older children and adolescents. For disability, we're looking for neck stiffness and photophobia, and then on exposure, firstly the abdomen for distension, masses, focal tenderness and peritonism, ear, nose and throat exam, looking at the mucous membranes, which helps circulation assessment, as well as tonsillitis and otitis media for tympanic membrane perforation. For skin, we're looking at rashes, lesions, cellulitis and bullae. Joints, looking for swelling and irritability and reduced range of motion to suggest septic arthritis, and muscles, tenderness and pain with passive movement. Red flag features on assessment are high level of parental concern, re-presentation within 48 hours, clinical deterioration despite treatment, and recent surgery or burns. Moving on to management now. Key principles in managing severe sepsis or septic shock: early recognition and seeking senior help, oxygenation, rapid vascular access, empiric broad-spectrum antibiotic therapy, fluid resuscitation and vasoactive medications, source control, early involvement of critical care services, and frequent reassessment. Okay, so a child's triaged and we're concerned about sepsis. What are we going to do? Firstly, we're going to call for senior help, move the patient to the resuscitation cubicle if one's available, and attach cardiorespiratory monitoring. We're then going to complete our initial assessment and management steps. We need to support the airway in breathing, applying supplemental oxygen, aiming for oxygen saturations greater than or equal to 94%. In the first 15 minutes, we need to establish vascular access, inserting an IO cannula if there's no IV access established promptly, and taking bloods. We need a culture, at least one, venous blood gas with the glucose and lactate, full blood count electrolytes, CRP, LFT, coags, plus or minus group and hold, and a urinalysis and LP can be considered once the child's been stabilised. We're then going to administer broad spectrum antibiotics, which we'll come to, and consider IM antibiotics if there's a delay in intravenous or intraosseous access. In the first 30 minutes after IV access has been obtained, we then need to bolus intravenous fluid, so sodium chloride 0.9%, 20 mL per kilo or 10 mL per kilo in neonates as a bolus, and then reassess. If required, we can give additional boluses at 10 mL per kilo and repeat as necessary to a maximum of 40 mL per kilo. We're going to again repeat the fluid status, looking at perfusion, so heart rate, cap refill, and urine output, though that'll be delayed, and the overall clinical condition, also assessing for signs of fluid overload. We're then going to commence inotropes or vasoactives early for kids with limited response to fluids. Here we can use adrenaline, 0.1 mics per kilo per minute as a starting dose, peripherally, whilst awaiting for a transfer to PICU for a central line. We can use push-dose inotropes if needed, and the dose would be 1 mic per kilo intravenously. For respiratory support, in a patient with a normal conscious state, we consider non-invasive ventilation, starting at high-flow nasal cannula, and then CPAP or BiPAP. In a patient with an altered conscious state, we've got to consider intubation and discuss with the retrieval service. Noting there's a significant risk of cardiac arrest associated with the use of induction agents in kids with septic shock. Let's talk about antibiotic choice now. Noting that the antimicrobial recommendations may vary according to local antimicrobial susceptibility patterns, so please refer to your local guidelines. For the first 2 months of life, the drug choice is the same, but the frequency increases with age. For less than or equal to 7 days, benzyl penicillin 60 mg per kilo and kefotaxime 50 mg per kilo intravenously 12 hourly. For greater than 7 to 28 days, benzyl penicillin 60 mg per kilo and kefotaxime 50 mg per kilo intravenously 8 hourly. For 1 to less than 2 months, benpen 60 mg per kilo and kefotaxime 50 mg per kilo intravenously 6 hourly. For greater than 2 months, we change drugs to ceftriaxone 100 mg per kilo as an IV daily dose, max 4 grams, or you can split that into 50 mg per kilo twice day, max 2 grams BD, or kefotaxime 50 mg per kilo, maximum of 2 grams, intravenous 6 hourly, plus flucloxacillin 50 mg per kilo, max 2 grams, intravenous 6 hourly. For oncology patients, we're giving piperacillin tazobactam, 100 mg per kilo on the piperacillin component, max 4 grams, intravenously 6 hourly. Adding amikacin 22.5 mg, which is actually 18 mg per kilo of greater than 10 years, max to 1.5 grams as an IV daily dose, and adding vancomycin 15 mg per kilo to 750 mg 6 hourly if severely unwell or high risk with therapeutic drug monitoring. For non-oncology patients with central venous access, vancomycin 15 mg per kilo to 750 mg intravenously 6 hourly with TDM, and ceftriaxone 100 mg per kilo max 4 grams IV daily, again splitting that 50 mg per kilo twice a day you can, or kefotaxime 50 mg per kilo, max 2 grams IV 6 hourly. Consider adding acyclovir 20 mg per kilo intravenously 8 hourly if HSV is suspected in less than 3-month-olds, in particular with skin lesions, seizures and hepatitis, or lethargy and concern for encephalitis. For suspected toxin-mediated disease, consider adding clindamycin 15 mg a kilo up to 900 mg intravenously 8 hourly, and intravenous immunoglobulin. Importantly, if IV access is unavailable, ceftriaxone can be given intramuscularly and could be given at a dose of 100 mg per kilo, maximum 4 grams as a daily dose, and that can be used in this circumstance in less than 2-month-olds. Further, specific and supportive management includes monitoring serum lactate, which may indicate the need for ongoing resuscitation. Also consider the need for source control, for example, removal of an infected device or line or drainage of an abscess, the need for procedural sedation to facilitate management, for example, ketamine, and consider differentials. So is there evidence of myocarditis or a sepsis-induced cardiomyopathy if there's evidence of cold shock with tachycardia or deterioration with fluid administration, getting a chest x-ray to look for cardiomegaly and an echocardiogram if one's available. Children on long-term steroid therapy or with known adrenal insufficiency should receive age-appropriate stress dose steroids, and patients with hypoglycemia should be managed with 2 mL per kilo of 10% glucose with a recheck in 15 minutes of their BGL. We need to liaise with the paediatric intensivist early to arrange the appropriate disposition, which may include inter-hospital transfer and retrieval. Okay, today we've talked about the RCH guideline on sepsis assessment and management. We've talked about high-risk groups, major pathogens, the assessment of sepsis, red flag features, management principles, the approach to management, and the appropriate antimicrobials for the different age ranges, and also some specific and supportive features and also disposition decision-making. Thanks for listening.